Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, before we start today's episode, I just wanted to thank Exciter. Dude, thank you so much for hooking us up and helping out with this episode. We really appreciate your help, and I hope you enjoy the episode, John. Here it is.
Hey, this is Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Devin Townsend from Strapping Young Lad, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, this is Glenn Tipton from Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, everyone, this is KK Downing of Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal, so you know what to do. Crank it up.
Hi, this is Ian Hill from Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey everybody, this is Rob Halford, the Metal God from Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
I am Dan Lorenzo from The Cursed, Hades Nonfiction, and who knows what else, and I love the show Talking Metal, which is what you are listening to right now.
This is Michael Grant with Endeavor Aster, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
What's up, Rubbernecks? This is Billy Milano from SOD and MOD, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Yes, Jim Brewer, and you're listening to Talking Metal! Hey, this is Vicio, you're rocking with Talking Metal! Fucking A!
The best hard rock, the best heavy metal, Talking Metal. A podcast hosted by Mark Striegel and John Astronomy. Available through iTunes and most other podcast providers. Feel the power, feel the glory. TalkingMetal.com.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. It's John Astronomy here with Mark Striegel, Midtown Manhattan.
Hey John, we had a great week last week. I think we got 3 Talking Metal interviews. There was interviewed CeCe Banana, who is going to be coming back next month to celebrate Talking Metal's 5-year anniversary. He was our first guest. Was it the very first episode he was on? I think so, right?
I think he was. We did that at my old apartment in Jersey City, and I remember thinking, boy, CeCe Banana is really good behind the mic.
Yeah, well, he's back to promote his new record, which you'll hear all about next month when he's on the podcast, actually probably in a couple weeks, coming back to celebrate our 5-year anniversary. August 2010 is the 5-year anniversary of Talking Metal. It's really unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe 5 years have passed since we've started Talking Metal, since you came up with the idea to do Talking Metal. And we had 5 great years. I mean, we've interviewed just about every single metal band that you can think of, with the exception of Metallica, so we just got to get them on.
Metallica and Oz, or Lemmy is one I'd love to get on. Ozzy's been on, I think, twice, yeah, so it'd be great to get him back. But Dio, unfortunately, we almost had him at one point, and it fell through, and, you know, I am a little bummed that we will never get him, but it's been a great 5-year run. We've had a lot of fun. John and I have known each other for a long time. I actually was just showing John on my personal YouTube page. I threw up some video footage of us jamming back in 1994, so there's one clip up there now. By the time we get this podcast posted, there'll probably be more. Maybe we'll link that through today's show notes. And you guys, if you want to see one, our grungy metal band, Roy's Baby, from the 1990s, we'll hopefully have some footage up there of us playing. And good sounding band. You know, it's like sometimes you think, oh, we weren't that great, but and sometimes it's the opposite. You think, oh, that was we were so great, and then you go back and look at it, and you suck. But I actually think we were pretty good.
I know. We practice 3 nights a week, which is, like, unheard of for us now because, like, I haven't even played one note on any instrument in, like, a month. But, yeah, it was a great gig. It was at the Orpheus, which was a place in Hoboken that I think now just doesn't exist anymore. And it was great. You get to see our family members. Your brother took the video, which is great. And I was on drums, and you were playing the White Explorer. And lead vocals.
Yes, our friend Sean on bass and Terry Ranger X on guitar. Sean, John, and I all met up at Berklee College of Music a few years earlier, and we stayed in touch when we got down here to New York. And speaking of Berklee, today's guest, Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater, was also up at Berklee, and we actually have some mutual friends like Rob Bailey and probably some other people, I don't know who. But anyways, Mike, we first met back on our TV show. He came and jammed a Motorhead song with us for our band Turtlehead. And he was in town playing The Garden, I believe, for the first time with Dream Theater and took a few minutes out before the band set to hop on board a tour bus, which Mr. Astronomy had lined up. He had it parked right outside of Madison Square Garden, the Gibson tour bus, which was awesome. And Mike came on board and hung out with us for probably 40 minutes or so. And we got some stuff with him for the podcast and potentially for a future episode of MTV2's Headbangers Ball. Nothing's ever definite with those guys over there at MTV2, so I say potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. We had such a great time hanging out on the Gibson bus. And for all of you listeners, the Gibson tour bus is a full-on, full-scale rock and roll style tour bus. But the inside of it kind of looks across between a tour bus and a Gibson version of a Hard Rock Cafe. There are guitars on the walls. And what's neat is they're not just for display. You can pick them up. You can plug in. You can play. And it's a really cool bus. Mike thought it was very cool. And it was just great to hang out with him before such a historic event. He had a lot of family members in town for the gig since, you know, Mike is from Long Island. And it was just a really great interview, great Dream Theater show. And then, of course, Iron Maiden played, which was also great.
Yeah, and I think when they were on stage, a great set by Dream Theater, by the way. They said something about I think Mike actually came out, took the mic, and said something about thanks for making a dream come true for some kids from Long Island, or something very similar to that, which was nice for Mike to jump up from behind the kit and actually say that. So, without any further delay, why don't we get into a little Dream Theater music and hear the interview with one of rock's all-time great drummers?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Why don't we hear a little Panic Attack from 2005?
Yeah.
Hey, it's John Astronomy from Talking Metal. I'm here with Mark Striegel and our very special guest, Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater.
What's up? We are here with three-fifths of Turtlehead. This is the big Turtlehead reunion year, man.
Absolutely. We got to do it again in person, you know, with all the same guys.
Totally. And
you guys did it with at the Hell show, right? Yeah, almost like a complete
Turtlehead
reunion.
Yeah, I did
reunion.
Some shows with Hale, and Bobby Blitz and Frankie Bello came out and came on stage, and we did Overkill that night, and it was like the big Turtlehead reunion.
I love it.
How was it playing with Hale? Do you enjoy playing? I mean, you do a lot of covers.
I thought you were going to say, how was it playing with those guys without us playing guitar. Now, Hale was awesome, man. Hale was like a dream gig for me. You know, like I was a kid in a candy store just doing classic metal and thrash covers. You know, the classic stuff like Priest and Maiden and Sabbath and Kiss. And then, you know, all the way to like the early thrash years, like early Metallica and Slayer and some Sepultura. For me, it was a blast. You know, everyone kind of knows me as the prog metal guy with Dream Theater, but the fact of the matter is, I mean, I'm a metalhead through and through, and that's like, that's my roots, that's in my blood, and to do that gig was a total, total treat.
Cool, and Dream Theater has been known to do sometimes entire albums of, you know, of covers. Any plans to do that with Dream Theater again?
No, there's no plans for that now. I mean, that was a kind of a tradition that I came up with, where if we do two nights in the same city, when we were doing the Evening With tours, and if there were two nights in the same city, the second night we would cover a classic album, and we did Master of Puppets, we did Number of the Beast, we did Dark Side of the Moon, and Deep Purple's Made in Japan. But, you know, as of now, there's no Evening With tours in the works, but if and when there are in the future, then yeah, the tradition will continue.
So you guys, speaking of Number of the Beast, are out with Iron Maiden right now. Were all the members of Dream Theater Maiden fans?
Some more so than others. I mean, really, myself, John Petrucci, and John Myung, you know, we are the three founders of Dream Theater. And when we formed the band 25 years ago, Maiden was like the blueprint that we were born out of. Really, when we formed Dream Theater, we wanted to be a cross between Maiden and Rush. And that was like what our goals were with the sound of Dream Theater. So for the three of us especially, you know, it's totally a dream come true. They're absolutely one of our biggest influences.
Now, you guys started the band up at Berkeley in 85, and I and Mark, we were up there in 87.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, like, how long did you stay at Berkeley?
We were at Berkeley for 1 year, two semesters, 85 into 86, and we met each other within the first couple weeks of school. And, well, I met them. Those two were up there together, and I met them, and we formed Dream Theater and basically spent the year there playing every single day. We would get the you know, the rehearsal rooms.
Rehearsal studios.
You could only get 2 hours at a time with those.
Right.
So we would actually wake up in the morning to reserve those rooms, each of the three of us, to get a six-hour block,
wow.
And we did it every day.
Man.
And after spending a year there and really getting to know each other and, you know, forming the nucleus of Dream Theater, we decided to just pursue that dream, and we left Berkeley after two semesters.
Wow. Well, it worked out perfectly. I was going to ask you, now, you have to bring in your own gear in those rooms. I don't know if people know that, but me as a drummer, it was insane. Every time you went to the practice, you had to lug your kit down to some room and then set it up, and then when you're done, you break it down and take it back to
your
room.
It was the only time in the history of my drumming career that I did that. Because even, I mean, obviously now I've a drum tech that's been with me for 20 years, but even before Berkeley, back in the early days of junior high school when I was like in my first cover band, there were always kids that wanted to help out.
Right.
But that year at Berkeley, for us to rehearse every day, we had to move the drums in, set them up, play, break them down, move them out every day.
Yeah.
And we had a routine. Like me, John, and John would go for dinner at TJ's at 5 o'clock. We'd eat dinner, and then they'd come by with their little rolling cart by my room, and we'd load up the drums and move into E19, and we had the same room every day for a year.
That's cool, man. You guys were dedicated.
I was just with one of our ex-classmates, Rob Bailey. Do you remember that guy?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, he says hello, by the way. We saw him over the weekend.
My roommate.
Yeah, John's
really?
Roommate.
In New York. I moved with Rob in New York.
And at Berkeley, he was my neighbor. He lived in the dorm right next to me on the fifth floor. But I wanted to ask you, at one point you said, there. You know, at this point, Dream Theater definitely does not need to open for anybody. But you chose to do the Maiden tour, which is, I'm sure, partly just simply because you respect Maiden so much. Is that the case?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we've been doing this for a long time now, and we've made a career out of headlining and doing it our ways. And throughout this 25 year career, we've only been an opening band twice before this. We did a tour with Deep Purple in 98, and we did a tour with Yes in 2004. So we really made a career out of doing it our way. But I've always said, you know, there were still three bands on that wish list, and if we got the call, we'd pack up and go. And it was Maiden, Metallica, and Rush. Those are the three remaining bands we would absolutely change all of our plans for to tour with. So when we got the call from Maiden to do it, you know, we weren't planning on touring at this point of the album cycle. We were planning on being done, but when Maiden calls, you pack up your bags and you go.
And you are staying so busy. The Avenged Sevenfold record is coming out at the end of this month, July 2010, and you will be going right out on the road with them. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's crazy. I'm doing this whole tour with Dream Theater and Maiden, and it ends July 20th, and then I begin rehearsals with Avenged Sevenfold July 21st, so literally the next day. And then I head out with them for the rest of the year. But it's crazy. I'm doing this whole North American tour with Maiden and Dream Theater, and then I'm going to go out and do like practically the same exact venues all over again. It's going to be like Groundhog Day for me.
And what was it like working with those guys? Obviously, young guys.
Well, I'll say that...
Very different style of music.
Different style of music in some respect. I mean, those guys are younger, and they have, you know, they're way more mainstream than Dream Theater, at least here in America, in terms of their, you know, career. But, you know, they had a lot of, they're great musicians, and they have a lot of that kind of shredding, you know, side to the band. Mm-hmm. So it may not be as unnatural as some people may think. I mean, those guys, or at least Jimmy and Matt, you know, The Rev and M Shadows, are huge Dream Theater fans. So it was more of a natural fit than some people may think on the surface. But, you know, it was an amazing experience because of the emotional aspect of it. You know, these guys were only a few weeks, you know, after the Rev's funeral, and they were obviously, you know, still in serious mourning, and they had never played with another drummer before. You know, they'd been together since like grade school. So for them to be in the studio with another drummer was, you know, a big adjustment and an emotional experience for them. And for me, it was an honor to be chosen to come in and do something like that in such an emotional, you know, situation. And, you know, after a couple of days of getting comfortable and just getting past that, you know, that nervous feeling that they were going through, then it all fell into place and we hit it off great. I mean, musically, we locked perfectly, and you know, I'm happy with the way the album came out. And personally, we totally hit it off. It was an experience that really bonded us. It was more than just a recording session for me. It was an emotional experience.
Cool. And then you're going to come off the road with them. And I was reading Dream Theater is already talking about another record that you would start recording early next year. Maybe.
We're going to take it one step at a time here. Okay. I got to finish off 2010 before I think of 2011. So we'll see what happens.
It's one of the things, I want to get back to this current tour, but since we're talking about recording a new album, I like that you guys don't sit and, you know, come up, you know, while you're on tour with, like, new stuff. You wait until you get into the studio, mm-hmm. and then you start the writing process. I think that's cool.
Dream Theater's always been collaborative writers. We've never been the type of band where one person comes in with finished songs or even finished ideas, for that matter.
Right.
We've always gotten together and jammed, and that's the way this band has written since the Berkeley days 25 years ago, and that formula has never changed. And the way we do it now, I think like the five out of the last six Dream Theater albums, we basically moved into a recording studio, empty-handed, nothing written, and we just kind of move in and set up shop and write and record simultaneously. You know, we'll write a song, and when the song is done, we'll get right into recording it. You know, while it's fresh and while we're inspired and while, you know, the vision and the, you know, the focus is there, we tackle it.
Bear Tracks is one of the studios that you record at, right? Yeah, where is that?
Bear Tracks is in Rockland County, New York. Okay. We've done, I think, four or five albums there, and then they closed a few years ago, as most so many
right.
professional
Hit Factory
studios.
Where you recorded.
Yeah, we closed.
That's where we
closed Bear Tracks. We closed the Hit Factory. So we're kind of like a nightmare. When somebody sees Dream Theater moving in, they think we're the kiss of death.
Yeah, the studio's going out of business.
But quite the contrary, we're actually one of the few bands these days that still does it that way.
Right.
So you know, we've done our last couple albums at Avatar here in New York City.
Okay. cool. Now, on this tour, you guys are doing, you know, a little bit of a shorter set, and you're not doing some of the tunes that you would normally do on a headlining Dream Theater tour. Tell us how you pick the tunes that are on this.
Well, when we do a normal Dream Theater tour, I always write a set list that is completely aimed at our fans, and I look at, you know, every set list from a particular city. So when we play New York, I'll look at what we played in New York the previous two or three times, and I'll write a set list that's
different,
completely
that.
Different, that's doesn't cool. repeat anything. However, the purpose of this tour with Maiden is, and I say this with all due respect to our fans, that, you know, we're not aiming this set list at our fans. We're aiming this set list at Maiden fans.
Right.
And we're trying to make some new fans out of their fan base. So I wrote a set list for this tour that's the same every night. I just basically thought of what would be the ultimate set list to grab these people and you know, have them kind of get a crash course in the metal side of Dream Theater.
Right.
And I wrote a 6-song set list, which basically is all of the hits that never were, but all the hits that should have been, you know, A Rite of Passage, Constant Motion, Pull Me Under, the stuff that's a little bit more accessible and a lot more metal.
Cool.
Are you doing Panic Attack?
Yeah, Panic Attack actually, strangely enough, has become one of the our most popular songs as a result right. of it being in Rock Band 2.
Yeah.
You know, for so many years, we lived in the shadow of Pull Me Under, and that was our only hit. But now Panic Attack, because of Rock Band 2, it's like our number one most downloaded song on iTunes because kids, you know, know
say,
the song from that.
A new generation of
yeah, absolutely.
Fans, too. Yeah, who then go on to discover, hopefully, your other music.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I wanted to ask you about the Transatlantic Project. Are you doing any more stuff with them this year?
Well, the rest of my year is going to be with Avenged Sevenfold,
right.
But I just did do 2 months of touring with Transatlantic in between the Dream Theater tours, and Transatlantic is real old school prog, quote unquote supergroup, guys from different prog bands, and I put that project together just to kind of, you know, pay tribute to that side of what I love. You know, I love so many different kinds of music, but that's a big side of me as well, and we did 3 albums through the years, and we just did a 2-month tour.
Right. I always thought prog was a cool thing, and I know that you had mentioned in previous interviews that, you know, for a while some people weren't thinking it was that cool, and then now all these bands like Mastodon or Muse, everybody is doing it now, and it's a cool thing. But you guys stuck to it and just did it, and
we've been prog all along.
Right.
We're not jumping on the prog bandwagon.
Right.
We've
started it.
We've been waving that flag proudly for, you know, over 20 years now, and
right.
we were never ashamed to admit it. We were prog from the beginning. We formed this band because we were trying to fill that void that, you know, all of our favorite prog bands like Yes, Rush, Genesis, you know, in the mid-80s when we formed, they were doing 5-minute pop songs.
Right.
So we wanted to, you know, hear those 15-minute epics with this crazy musicianship, and we also wanted to have that metal edge because we were listening to Maiden and Priest and Sabbath. So that's where Dream Theater formed, but we've always been proud to be prog.
Yeah.
Speaking of prog, any plans to continue Prog Nation?
Well, Progressive Nation was a package that I assembled, and, you know, it was basically a response to try to get a lot of different progressive bands from different sides of the music and metal world. You know, you can have, you know, a band like Opeth is progressive and a band like Big Elf is progressive, but yet they sound nothing like each other. So we've done 2 runs through the States now, and it is something I hope to continue in the future. But that being said, I know a lot of our fans miss the big, long Dream Theater show as well. So in a perfect world, we can alternate. Maybe do one round of an evening with Dream Theater and then one round with Progressive Nation. And in a perfect world, be able to do both sides.
Cool. And now you composed a 12-step epic symphony, would you call it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And it was in honor or in tribute to Bill W. Is that ever going to come out? And can you talk a little bit about who Bill W. Mm-hmm. actually is? It's not Bill Ward, I'm assuming.
No.
Right?
Yeah. Bill W. is the guy that founded Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been clean and sober for over 10 years now.
Congratulations.
And it changed my life. I mean, I had a drinking problem and an addictive personality. So, you know, God bless the people that can do it in moderation, but I never was able to do it in moderation, and I needed to get clean and sober in order to be sitting here with you today. And once I did, the 12 steps were a huge part of my life and are a big part of my life, and I wanted to write about it, and I didn't think I could kind of cover such a big topic in one song. So I had this idea of breaking it up over the course of many albums, and, you know, writing a song about the first three steps and then the fourth and fifth step and then the sixth and seventh step, and, you know, having it over the course of several albums and have these songs that would ultimately interconnect when the whole big piece was done. And it took five albums and almost 10 years to complete, you know, the five chapters that will ultimately come together to create the all 12 steps, and hopefully someday we'll perform them in its entirety on stage.
Cool. Now, we know you got to get ready for the show, so we'll wrap it up soon, but I wanted to talk, this is my favorite, one of my favorite parts of Talking Metal is I get to talk gear, because I'm a fanatic and I should be banned from 48th Street, but the Melody Master snare drums, I just wanted you to talk a little bit about them, and then also some of the Max cymbal stacks, I think are just a really cool thing, so you can tell me a little bit about all that stuff.
Well, those are my signature products with Tama and Sabian, and they're named after my children, Melody right. and Max. The Tama signature snare is a Melody Master, and I had this idea of, rather than a traditional two-way snare strainer, which was just traditionally just on or off,
right.
I wanted to have a snare strainer that can actually lock into three positions, so it goes either off or loose or tight.
Wow.
So you can actually have a loose snare and then hit it, and it'll be a tight snare like a piccolo, you know, at the flick of a switch. So it was an idea I had, and Tama built it for me, and that's, you know, that's one of the cool features of the Melody Master.
Yeah. They come in different sizes, too, like different shell sizes.
There's a 12-inch steel shell, which is more like a piccolo, and then there's a 14-inch maple shell.
Cool. Now, the cymbal stacks, like, tell, for some of the Talking Metal listeners or viewers that don't know what a cymbal stack is, tell us about that.
Well, my Sabian cymbals are the Max cymbals, which is named after my son, and basically there's three Max splashes, which are 7, 9, and 11, and then there's three sets of Max stacks, which are basically two cymbals stacked on top of each other, and they give you a super trashy, quick percussive sound. And, you know, there were some drummers that were doing it years before I put out these cymbals, like Terry Bozzio is probably the most famous that had that sound. And at the time when I developed these cymbals, Sabian didn't have anything like that. It was before Terry was on board. And since then, Terry has come on board with Sabian, and now he offers them as well. But I was basically taking different cymbals from Sabian and just stacking them myself. And then, you know, I said to Sabian, why don't we just create a set that really works together and is in, you know, can endure a beating and hold up to it. So we came up with the Max Stacks.
Very cool. So, Mike, thanks very much for hanging out with Talking Metal.
My pleasure. Good seeing
you guys. Turtlehead, and we definitely got to get together and jam again.
Anytime. You know where to reach me, man.
Absolutely.
Cool. We'll be right back.
What you just heard was As I Am by Dream Theater. A big thanks to Dream Theater for putting on a great show at Madison Square Garden a couple weeks back, and also for Mike for not only giving us the interview before his show, but for coming on our TV show and jamming the Overkill song with Frankie from Anthrax and Blitz from Overkill.
Definitely. We really need to at some point attempt to line up another Turtlehead reunion.
Yeah. Actually, let's listen to Turtlehead right now.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're Turtlehead, and we play rock and roll.
just heard was Turtlehead with Mike Portnoy on drums, John Astronomy, Mark Striegel on guitars, and Frank Bello on bass, Bobby Blitz Ellsworth on vocals. So Blitz told me the next time we do a Turtlehead jam, he wants to play UFO. If there is a next time, which I don't know. Could be. Who knows? We'll see what happens. We would love to jam with those guys again.
Yeah, every time we hook up with them, everybody talks about how cool the jam was. And I think the hardest part is just going to be getting everybody into town at the same time.
Yes. I know Frank, I believe, lives out in Yonkers, so he's here. Bobby is in Jersey. And Mike, I think, is out. I know he's from Long Island, but I think he may actually be in Pennsylvania or something now. I'm not sure. But, yeah, so if everybody was in town, which I'm sure is rare to have all those guys in the tri-state area at once, but if they were, it would be fun to do something, especially if we get some kind of television station involved or, you know, to shoot it or something.
Yeah, no doubt. And just once again, thanks to Mike Portnoy for hanging out with us. He's always really cool. We communicate on Facebook, and he's always posting really cool things. So all of you Dream Theater fans, if you haven't already become one of his friends or fans on Facebook, do so, because especially when he's on tour, on this last Dream Theater tour, he was always posting cool photos and little things, and now he's about to go on the Avenged Sevenfold tour. So be sure to check him out online.
Yes, and I would like to mention that hopefully, again, I think I mentioned this earlier, but again, Mike will probably be on at least one, possibly two upcoming episodes of MTV2's Headbangers Ball, God willing, you know. So we'll see what happens with that. August 23rd, I believe there's going to be an Iron Maiden special that John and I are helping produce. When I say special, it's a special edition of the Headbangers Ball. And again, John and I are helping produce that, and we're going to try to squeeze a clip of Mike in there talking about one of his favorite Iron Maiden videos. And then, hopefully, with any luck, we'll have Mike back for a full episode of the Headbangers Ball sometime, maybe this fall. We'll see. So no promises, but I would say it probably it looks good. Wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, definitely. I think that we'll make this a reality. And we've also got, you know, a few other cool things lined up for the Headbangers Ball. So we're constantly out there doing our interviews, and we have a bunch of surprises for you guys.
Cool. And you can always, if you miss the actual show, they post some, not all of the clips that John and I do on their website. So maybe if we think of it, we'll link that too. We were recently on with Rob Halford and Blitz from Overkill. So definitely. Anyways, let's get into the brand new Avenged Sevenfold. This is Nightmare. It's on iTunes. Support these guys. 99 cents. You get this great song. Maybe it's $1.29. I don't know. I think they raised the prices on some of the songs. But again, Mr. Mike Portnoy on drums on this one, guys. Nightmare by Avenged Sevenfold. We'll be right back.
nightmare.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.